Researchers are getting closer to creating robotic hands with the dexterity of human hands. The hands are so realistic, they too have dropped their iPhone in the toilet.
It's amazing what scientists can accomplish when they pretend the experiment has a benefit other than masturbation. An Oregon far-right group called Patriot Prayer plans to hold a rally near Portland this weekend. Though in Oregon, being far-right means your gun shoots gay marriage licenses.
True.
Virginia Democratic candidate Leslie Cogburn has called out her GOP opponent, Denver Riggleman, for what she calls being into Bigfoot erotica. All I can say is it's nice to finally find a Republican candidate with whom I can see eye to eye.
Sunday marked 100 days until the midterm elections, so that gives you less than 100 days to get camera ready for your next selfie with an I voted sticker, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Another truth.
A 25-foot, 330-pound statue of Jeff Goldblum has been erected in London to celebrate 25 years of Jurassic Park. So between that and the giant inflatable baby Trump balloon, London is turning itself into a huge Spencer's Gifts.
The idea that the Jeff Goldblum statue was erect just was disturbing to me. But anyway, there was a lunar eclipse on Friday, but unfortunately, it was only visible from shithole countries. Oh. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, welcome to the Trump Report. I'm Christian Black, joined, as always, by our mirth master. I'm trying to think of funny ways to say person who writes funny stuff. Tom Brown,
Mirthmaster. I thought that one was being thrown at Scott.
No, I like Mirthmaster.
He's also a Mirthmaster.
Kind of say it a few times fast. It's fun.
Sure.
Tamara Brown, and of course, Scott Moore, the S-Man.
That's right.
Chelsea, on assignment, lawyering, so she is not with us, but she was going to be.
Doing an important public
she's
service.
She's joined Mueller's team.
Yes, exactly. You know, I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. She would definitely put the time in. Anyway, so much to talk about, some fun, some not, but I thought it would be great to start off with our friend Rudy Giuliani, who says that he's revealed now, sort of, well, I was going to say surprisingly, but, you know, he called in to Fox and Friends. I think they weren't looking for him, you know, but it's like, it's Rudy again. I mean,
should we take the call?
I think we have to.
He's just going
to
call back.
Because what if we don't take it? Then Trump's going to get mad at us. All right, fine. Hey, Rudy, you're on the air. What's up, buddy?
Long time no talk.
Yeah. And it's like,
good to hear from you.
What now? Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah, Derek Jeter's a gift. Great. So he said that the Trump campaign, this is a quote from the Daily Mail, not a direct quote from Rudy Giuliani, but said that the campaign held top-level meeting before Don Jr.'s notorious Trump Tower get-together with the Russian. But he says that the president was not there and it was not about Clinton dirt. Oh, that's fine then. All right. So it's this thing that sounds like it's not particularly good. It's not that bad. So that's fine. Now, Scott, we always talk about nothing's ever surprising. Right. You're not allowed to be surprised by anything on this show. But it can be surprising when somebody says something like this. And I mean, it's not explosive. It's not a bombshell. Other things that involve explosions. But just your thoughts when you hear it. Is it just like even Rudy should know not to, you know, just keep it all closer to the vest, right?
No, it's like, why would you even bring up this other meeting that they weren't even talking about? It just seems suspicious. Like, what's the point? It's like, yeah, you have meetings every day. Like, why bring up that meeting now 2 days before? And I mean, we'll get to it in a little bit about the no collusion. And yes, so what if there was collusion? It's not a crime. It's just it's kind of like it's just getting more and more desperate because, you know, a couple months ago or whenever it was now, could have been a couple years ago, it feels like. But, you know, it started out with like, oh, no, that meeting was just about adoption and there were no Russians. Then it became like, oh, no, there was some things going on. There were a couple Russians, but nobody really talked about any dirt. Oh, but then Don Jr. talked about a little bit of dirt, but it was no big deal. And, you know, his dad never knew. Then it's like, oh, no, his dad knew and helped write the response. And then it became like, oh, but there's no collusion. And now it's turning into, oh, so what if there was collusion? It's not even a crime anyways. I'm like, it's just, it's getting more and more desperate
and
as
the
we
going
move
back
along.
And forth between mm-hmm. whether Donald Trump knew or not.
Right. Yeah. Right. And
well, let's admit to one thing. It's not that hard to believe that he didn't know, that he had no idea what was going on in his campaign. You know, I mean, I think.
Well, true. In that sense,
you know,
yes.
But not saying that, it could also just
yes
be like.
Yes and no.
No. The idea that he doesn't know something that was happening in the campaign, I think he certainly.
The thing is, it's not that he didn't know that it was happening or does know. I think it's that he knows that it's happening. He does not know the gravity of what is happening. Like, he knows that there is a meeting. He does not care or have any feeling on the significance of it, I think. Mm-hmm.
Interesting thing we're talking about, Don Jr. I saw that, he's in a relationship with Kimberly Guilfoyle from mm-hmm. Fox News, and she resigned from Fox News. And you're like, why would you do that? You know, you're just like literally in bed with the Trump family as opposed to just figuratively. Yeah. But it's like, I feel like you have a little better insight. You know, why leave now? This is when she'd be really interesting as far as I'm
maybe
concerned.
she's ready that maybe Sarah's finally leaving and she's thinking like she'll be next up. If she can already be out of the Fox gig, she can roll right into that gig.
And not to turn this into TMZ, although that is my dream. I think she was married to Gavin Newsom at
she
one
was.
Point.
She was.
Just the idea really? That, where her headspace
yeah,
was
from
at.
Extreme left, and now I'm
and now up. It's just like, look, I mean, she's probably going to shoot an elephant at some point and pose with it. So, anyway, just
wouldn't be surprised with her.
But anyway, so, we're talking about this idea that, you know, Rudy says that collusion is not a crime. This would be a great Chelsea moment
mm-hmm.
because I feel like it is, but God, I don't know. You know, Rudy Giuliani probably does know more about stuff like this than I do. You know, I think I know better than him when you shouldn't talk about things, in front of a microphone. But what if we collectively as a panel heard, Tamara, I'll start with you. What have we heard about this? Every indication is that, you know, collusion is really bad, but is it illegal?
I think the way that CNN broke it down earlier today that I saw was that the word collusion, that's not a crime, but collusion is not what the official charge would be. It would be conspiracy. Mm-hmm. It would be, what's the word? Starts with a T.
Treason?
Treason, those would be... those would be. It's so sad that English is my first language. Sometimes those would be.
I actually thought you were doing a bit. I was like, oh, she's pretending she doesn't know.
It's like words with friends.
Words.
Yeah. No, but it's like
6-7 hours.
Only have three on the panel today, so we got to spice it up with a little game.
I'm just worried that you had a stroke. So all right. So yeah. So treason. But yeah.
So I mean, yeah. Okay. Technically, collusion is not a crime, but that's
that wouldn't be the actual crime per se. So they're trying.
It would
to
be the, so the sitting
words.
Down to like, hey, let's collude. That's fine, but then when you're actually in your collusion session, sort of those plans.
Yeah, when you're conspiring.
Well, so then what Rudy said is accurate. Colluding isn't against the law.
It's a play on words, and again, to as we know, to help. Continue to bring down the Mueller investigation and say it's not valid and it's a witch hunt and that there's, you know, conflicts and that they're all deep state out to get him and continue to gin up the base to froth them up and get them to say no matter what happens with the outcome of what the investigation says that they're going to say, oh, no, this was all against him and it's all, you know, fake news and all that good stuff.
It's all fake news. I mean, yeah. Tamara was just saying she's got her information from CNN, so obviously we can't rely on any of it.
That's right.
Also, I just want to remind any Republicans who think that this is, in fact, a witch hunt. I retweeted today the old photo of Robert Mueller's Marine photo and a list of the awards he received in the military. Very decorated soldier, Purple Heart recipient. He's a decorated veteran. And that's just something to keep in mind when everybody is quick to think that this is just, you know, just trying to pin down. He is Republican.
Well, I was going to say, and
Rod
he's a
Rosenstein is Republican. Just a reminder. Just a reminder for when people are thinking that this is some sort of witch hunt.
Which I guess, you know, is great for actual witches right now that no one's hunting.
Yeah, no one's focusing on them right now.
Yeah, this is a great time to be a Wiccan. It is, because nobody's actually bothering them. They're too busy trying to impeach President Trump. But how's the impeachment clock coming along, Scott?
It's still the same at the moment. Yeah,
okay, so it hasn't budged.
No, it hasn't budged in a while.
Are we at a point where it's like an old VCR where it's just blinking 12 o'clock and we have to actually get in there and reset it?
And reset the clock.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, we're going to wait and see. Like I said, it would always end up hinging on the midterms and getting into 2019. So, you know, once we get past midterms, we see a big blue wave, then I'll be like, nope, it's 11:59 in 30 seconds.
But how infuriating is it going to be when the Senate will not flip, but even if it did, you still need two-thirds. Right. So
you still need Republicans to come on your side.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I think that what Trump is most guilty of is having people not like him. And you have a lot of people who are just determined, like, well, we really don't like this guy. We should get rid of him. And, you know, it's the way people felt about, well, probably, there's probably somebody that felt the way about every president, except for my favorite, James Polk. Everybody loved him.
Of course.
But, you know, there's great people who are actively, like, we got to keep Obama to a one-term president, and there's a lot of reasons why people thought that George W. Bush shouldn't have been president. But so there's always going to...
Those were the days.
You're always going to have your haters. Oh, yeah, no, now it's... Yeah. Forget it. It's just like... Speaking of fake news CNN, there are a lot of commercials on for their they did a show on the 80s and the 90s, mm-hmm. and now they're doing the 2000s, mm-hmm. and you see like young George W. Bush, and you know, you're also reminded when you see young Obama from when he first started, just like how much that job ages you. And God, I mean, Trump looked awful when he started.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But the thing is, he doesn't look any different because he doesn't do anything. You see his schedule? He starts his intelligence reports or intelligence briefings at 11:30 in the morning.
So, yeah, but then he's up to like 3 in the morning.
I know. I guess he's got to spend like 4 hours on the hair and getting it just right and the orange spray tan.
It's a process.
So it probably takes 4 or 5 hours. So, you know, and he's got to tweet for at least an hour or two, Fox and Friends.
It's just incredible. I can remember listening to George W. Bush speak and thinking like this. How can we have a president who is this inarticulate, who is this bumbling? And then, weren't we so young and innocent in those days? I mean, just to imagine where we were going, which means after Trump and we get another Republican in the office, it's going to be Larry the Cable Guy. It's going to be.
Look, I think that he would probably be really good at creating jobs, Larry the Cable Guy.
You think so? You
know, I feel pretty confident that he would. You know, this this point about being sort of inarticulate and a bad speaker, this wasn't something that was on the list that I sent out to you guys. It's something I sort of wanted to talk about for a few weeks. Just sort of a general feeling. It can be your personal feeling and just how people in general think. Do you feel like it's okay to, you know, be on a show maybe like this and say, oh, Sarah Palin's an idiot? Or is that too strong? And you should say like, oh, I think would you be nicer and say, oh, she's not that well read. Maybe she's, you know, in overhead. Or do you feel, because I feel like it's acceptable to say, well, Sarah Palin's an idiot. And there's a reason I'm making this point. What do you think, Tamara? You first.
I haven't called President Trump anything other than inarticulate, a poor speaker, a fifth grade vocabulary. I've said those kinds of things. I feel like that's being pretty diplomatic about it, because to just say if I have the opinion he's an idiot, he's an oaf or something like that, I feel like that's, I mean, what the ultimate point of what we're talking about here is to, you know, share an opinion with somebody who may have a differing view. They're not going to be all that welcoming to what you have to say if you put things in that term, I guess. But that being said, I was thinking about Jeff Sessions on the way over here, and he, I think, is pure evil. So I don't know. I walk it back.
Can you be pure evil when, you know, you do feel like oh man, there's just a lot of things that aren't firing in there in his head. You know, there's a.
You think he's like more mentally unstable than
I think
evil soul.
I think it's like a 47 card deck that he's playing with. You know, you can get through most hands in most games, but you know when you're going to run into a problem when it's just a game of Go Fish.
he's got all those Keebler Elf recipes in his head, so that takes up a lot of space. So you know, trying to remember other things can be a little bit difficult. And you got to remember all those great recipes.
I think he has a dark, damaged soul.
Yeah, but don't we all?
Yeah, no, to some degree. I don't know.
No, we don't. We do not.
But specifically, and the reason why I bring up Sarah Palin is I want to sort of make a comparison, not so much with President Trump, but sort of the same question for you, Scott. Do you feel like it's acceptable to be on television and call her an idiot because of... Especially like from that Katie Couric interview onward,
right?
That was basically the impression of her.
I mean, look, I refer to Trump as Orange Clown, but at the same time, we're doing a little bit more of a comedic show. I think it depends on the show that you're doing. And if I was on Meet the Press or something, I'm not going to go out and call Trump an Orange Clown, because like Tamara's saying, if you're there and you're talking about points and reasons why you support or don't support a candidate or their positions, you want to have some backup and validity and facts facts are a crazy thing nowadays, but you want to have something to support instead of just resorting to name calling. So I really think it depends on the audience. And is it a comedic show? Is it more of a, okay, we're having a serious discussion? And I agree, if it's a serious policy driven show, then yeah, calling someone by name doesn't anything positive. If it's a comedic show, then yeah, I think go for it, and definitely let your position be heard, because people are tuning in because they know that you're going to be comedic and you're going to be supporting one agenda or candidate over another anyway. So,
and the reason I ask is because I'm wondering, I get the feeling people are afraid to say that sort of, you know, junior socialist in training media darling Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, people are afraid to say that she's an idiot. And I'm not saying she's an idiot. She has a degree in economics. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that she studied that hard, because you see clips of her and look, she's on with Trevor Noah. That's not a gotcha, you know? And it's just like, I feel bad for her trying to explain stuff that I should be able to, I should be confused. Like, that's how I would explain it. I'm like, well, you know, you just got to try and, you know, tax other people. But you have a degree, you're running. And, you know, look, she's running for a House seat or whatever. So it's, you know, it's not like you're running for president.
And she's speaking for her very particular district.
But there have been several, you know, and the occupation of Palestine, which I guess that's a specific, you know, political opinion, but certainly factually incorrect. And people were so quick to point to Sarah Palin. And is it because so many people want her to succeed? And I know that you'll get people in
the
media.
They were drawing a parallel between her and Sarah Palin?
I'm drawing the parallel myself because I'm just like, well, she doesn't sound like Sarah Palin, but she sounds like someone who is not as up to speed on things.
See, I wasn't aware of this until you mentioned it last week, because I haven't seen the interviews.
I've
seen her. The interviews I've seen have been.
And there was one on Firing Line. So those are the two. And it's like, when you're on, I'm using air quotes, smart shows, whatever, it can be tricky for people. But when you're just sitting down with Trevor Noah, I mean, he's not even American. He doesn't know what he's talking about either. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, it's a very friendly setting. And I mean, there's like a specific 2-minute clip that was making the rounds, but I watched the whole thing and it's like, look, she's not awful, but it's like if I'm running against her, well, let me look at it, because I can actually quote some of what she said.
Because I just want to make sure she actually is saying something that is uninformed, because her being young and pretty and a woman, it lends itself to people, you know, not, you know, she maybe might not be specific enough in one answer, and that is
right. And then it's the difference between that and Trump being able to say whatever,
exactly,
and have a badge of honor for not being prepared for things. And just being incoherent, and people are like, you know, I mean, of course, most people make fun of that too. But
she, looking the way that she does, presenting herself the way that she does, I would just worry that that's why I'm asking for, like, what exactly did she say? I'm not saying you're wrong.
Well, no, that's what I was wondering what you were thinking too, because I thought you were going to go with, you know, is it where some people are quick when you were saying about Palin being called an idiot? I was like, is that more of a female thing versus a male thing?
Well, that's why I'm using her as the example, right, though, because they're both female, you know? And look, the world's a lot different than it was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think that you're going to be a lot more careful when you say something bad about people, but especially when you're going to talk about women. And I just feel like it's a simple matter of the political leanings of each of them. And I'm not trying, you know, Chelsea's head would explode if I'm not actually comparing, you know, they're not. Look, I mean, to be fair, I mean, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I mean, she went to BU. It's like the fifth best school in Boston. But still, she, yeah, I'm just saying, she didn't go to Harvard. So it's fine. But I just, I don't know. I feel like my point is, I feel like people are afraid to talk about her in the same way they talked about Sarah Palin. And I'm, you know, I'm just.
I think it's just because people like what I'm like, we're unaware of this, whatever it is that she said, because I think with Sarah Palin, she said things that were so the scene Alaska from her backyard. She said things that were so outlandishly ridiculous that it made headlines. And I want to make sure that anything that she says hasn't been that.
I'm not here to defend Sarah Palin, but there were things that Tina Fey said as Sarah Palin that got attributed to her. So
amazing.
No, which is
she was so good.
Which, as anybody appreciates comedy, you're like, well, that's the dream right
that
there.
That is.
But so
I miss those days.
She's
again.
Very. So back to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which I wish, you know, I wish she had a fun nickname.
Yeah, but it's a fun name too. No, kind of fun to say.
It sounds cool. Yeah, and look, when you have a big name on a ballot, you're like, oh yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, can't miss it.
Her answers are inarticulate in the way where she's not really saying anything. So I could read this quote about what she's saying about people not paying their fair share of taxes. This is what was isolated, and it's you know, I'll read some of it. One of the things that we saw is if people pay their fair share, if corporations and the ultra wealthy, for example, as Warren Buffett likes to say, if he pays as much as his secretary paid, 15% tax rate, if corporations paid, if we reverse the tax bill, these aren't dot, dot, dots because she said something. So it's just sort of, you know, focusing the narrative, and maybe that's what it is, and it makes her look inarticulate, but... And again, maybe if she's running for a bigger office, you have this all buttoned up.
I don't understand. What's wrong with that?
She's not answering. She's not answering questions. Yeah, it's just it's like the way that I would talk about seeing, you know, the Iron Fist trailer.
Yeah,
I'm so excited.
I think that is an example of her being a young woman, because I think if we went through some clips right now, we could find 20 male politicians right now who do the exact same. I mean, that is nothing that is.
But, yes, and I think it's like she needs to have it's probably nervous. She's just spouting things out, and that happens. I mean, obviously, we know Donald Trump does that all the time.
Right.
Makes completely no sense.
And that was the piece I was reading I was reading a piece on the National Review about her. But the point is, like, well, just because Trump's inarticulate, it doesn't mean that it's okay for other people to. But I think when I've read interviews with her, it definitely reads better. So then I'm wondering, like, well, what do they do? Do they sort of truncate her answers?
I mean, that wasn't even inarticulate. That was just not answering the question, which is
well, clearly and succinctly,
which is mostly what a lot of politicians do.
But I guess so. My overall problem, and you know, again, it's a fairly small office that she's running for. So we don't, because it's in New York, I guess it has so much attention. But I just think that, you know, say this is the beginning of a trend and her answers are seeming a little bit more comedic, I feel like people will be afraid to really, you know, make fun of her. You know, is somebody learning an impression of her on SNL for the fall? Maybe not, because, again, it's, you know, it's a small seat. But I don't know. I was just sort of wondering.
I think until she says something that is completely ridiculous, we need to cut her some slack, because that wasn't there was nothing out of the ordinary in that answer at all.
But I'll say, and I'll ask Chelsea to watch. Let's all watch it for next week and just see. And, you know, look, some of it is like, you know, who knows how many times she's been on television. It's probably not going to be that many.
Right.
So there's definitely going to be those butterflies and things. But you know, nobody expected her to win her primary.
No.
And so all of a sudden, it's just like it's all house money for her. So even if she doesn't win, that, you know, it's well, before, you know, fast forward 10 years, she could be Kimberly Guilfoyle.
True. And got several book deals and everything else. You never know.
So that was more something I had thought about talking about.
No, it's an interesting.
Wasn't really prepared for, but because it sort of came up.
It's an interesting point.
Yeah, and, I meant to ask about that since we brought it up briefly last week.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that.
And R. Scott Brown is pointing out that Sarah Palin never said, "You can see Russia from my house." She said a variation of it.
Yeah.
Which inspired what Tina Fey said, which is actually what I was saying. So she said something very close to that. that because she's in Alaska, she's very close to it. But she did not say the words, "You can see it from my house." It's true. But thank you.
You can see it from down the street from my house because, you know, she's just a block away.
And thanks to thanks to Scott Brown, who knows a few things about being in the Senate. So we always appreciate hearing from him. Right. Anyway, one of the things I wanted to talk about, though, is a lady who has been in the public eye for, you know, a little bit longer than her is Ruth Bader Ginsburg, saying she feels like she's got at least 5 good years left, which, by the way, if she believes that, God bless her, that she thinks – because she's 85, or am I wrong on that?
Yeah, she's going to be 85.
She's going to be 85. Mm-hmm. So she feels like until 90, I'm good. And I feel like if she's going to say it that way, she must feel that way. And I'm sort of reminded the podcast that I work on, the Dennis Miller Option, we had A.J. Benza, who is well-known for being a sort of a celebrity reporter. But he knows Donald Trump really well because they used to run in the same circles and dated the same woman at the same time. But anyway, he had a conversation. Yeah, exactly. He had a conversation with Trump before he actually ran. And what he said to him was, "Why do you want to do this to yourself? Like, how many good summers do you think you have left?" And without missing a beat, Donald Trump said, "I've got 30 good summers left." So he's like, he's definitely like in his mind. But look, nothing about Donald Trump that makes me think that he doesn't really think that he's going to live to 100.
Right.
You know, I mean, look, and with that diet and the shape he's in, why couldn't he live to 200?
But I mean, his dad lived to be like 93 or something, and that was a while ago. So,
that was before Diet Coke.
Right, that's true. But the president seemed to be beating that longevity record now every couple of years because, you know, it was Ronald Reagan, then it was Gerald Ford, now George H.W. Bush. So, yeah. And Jimmy Carter's right behind him. So, not saying that that Trump will necessarily, but the longevity, because presidents get great health care. Figure that. And so they have access to the great, you know, doctors and medical stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, what's going to happen if she doesn't?
Well,
what are people going to do about it? I think she's doing that to reassure her liberal base that she's not going anywhere, because they've already seen that with the retirements recently and the stolen Supreme Court seat back in 2016. So I think she's doing it as a way to reassure them that she's going to be here through after 2020 election. So that way the base doesn't freak out.
So
if she's wrong, what are we going to do?
and so the reason I mentioned it, though, is she's very specific about 5 years. And look, I don't think anybody's going to say it's impossible that Trump gets reelected. There are definitely people who feel it's unlikely. But it's, you know, the idea of him being elected in the first place seemed so unrealistic. So it won't take much for him to still be president in 5 years. So what does she do then? She's like, well, I have 5 good years. And, you know, like
four
that aren't so great.
Yeah.
But she might be basing it on the fact that she's not the oldest Supreme Court justice. There was a Supreme Court justice who was serving until he was 90. So she might be basing it on being like, I'm going to be.
Well, yes, but I think she's just trying to get through the election, and then maybe after election,
she'll
be, five more years after this. If he was to win re-election, then she can say that. And I think it's just now to make her liberal fans know that she's sticking around. At least her plan is still after 2020.
She knows we need this sort of. She knows she just has to throw us a bone because we're so worried right now. That's what I appreciate it.
Yeah. And it's been discussed in a number of places. But do you think that, obviously, it's in hindsight, it's easy to think about it, but should, with the advent of hindsight, should she have resigned in 2014 when Obama could have replaced her? And it, in theory, at least, he would have gotten to pick a replacement that actually would have been put on the court?
I mean, it's like
it's
answering
such a hypothetical,
the speculation of the hypothetical, because maybe she feels great and she has.
Yeah.
And she,
I mean, she's got 5 good years now.
Look, I mean,
so
maybe
that would have been 7 good years.
If Hillary Clinton was president, I think, maybe she would have felt more free to be like, I can retire at 84, 85.
January 22nd, she would have been like, all right, hey, this has been fun.
Yeah. But I think back at 2014 or whatever, she was 70s and probably thought, I'm feeling great. Like, let's keep going. So I think it would be hard to say back then.
Had
she
Hillary won, she'd be enjoying a cigar after every dinner now. But now she can't. She's like, nope. Yeah. Got to make sure I keep an eye on the ticker.
That's true. Do you feel like, I wonder if there's, you know, political action committees and just organizations that are really vested in keeping her healthy.
Yeah.
And like, don't eat that.
Yes. Keeping monitoring her 24/7.
Look, I hear that and I'm like, oh, God bless her that she, you know, I hope I have 5 good years left.
But that's what I'm saying. But if you don't, like, nobody can do anything if she doesn't, you know? So it's like, hey, you're just saying it to make people feel better, but something happens, clearly you can't do anything about it. So it's really just to
appease her
fans.
She could be hit by a bus tomorrow.
Right.
You know?
Oh, my God.
So
stay away from buses, I guess is what you... And look, if Trump replaces her, it's he's going to replace her with Rudy. So so you never know what those votes are going to be.
He is hoping.
It would be amazing if he did, because there hasn't been, if you go back even for the past several presidents, going back the past 30 plus years, you can see that really only two have been picked. So I already feel like, okay, Trump's gotten his two. He's done. You know, going back to a lot of 8-year term presidencies, Obama, Bush Jr., and you can see that a lot of them happen at the beginning of their terms too, just coincidentally, but going back to even George H.W. Bush got two, Ronald Reagan. So Ronald Reagan had three, but you could see that technically it you don't usually get that many. So two is seems to be the average lately. So he would be definitely batting above average if he got the third one. So statistically.
It's certainly something that I think a lot of people are keeping an eye on. And
he's got enough of a challenge with this one right now to replace.
Yeah, but as we've discussed, it doesn't seem like it's going to be. I feel like it's going to happen. Let's put it that way. You know, it could take a little while, but
it could be the Bork thing though. Back in 1987, yeah, which was true. The one that you know.
So President Trump says that he would certainly meet with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, and without preconditions. And the reason why he says that is interesting, because the idea that President Obama said anything of the sort was a major scandal. But here's the thing I agree with that President Trump says is, I'll meet with anybody. There's nothing wrong with meeting. I mean, he's already met sort of the one guy that you figured that they wouldn't meet with, which was Kim Jong-un. So once you met with him, it's like, well, why not? You know, it's not gonna hurt. You know, the idea that Putin can come and play tennis at the White House, that's a little different. But, you know, you're going to go some neutral party and meet with people. I don't know, Tamara, is there some reason why it's not okay to meet with a crazy person in the Middle East?
Why would it not be okay? Man, I don't know. Maybe.
Or is it just the idea that Trump's okay with it means, okay, there's got to be something wrong?
Well, there's got to be something. You know, he's got a new hotel he wants to put in Iran and whatever ulterior motive these meetings really have behind them. But, you know, I'd say there's nothing. After Putin and Kim Jong-un, there's nothing. If only we could get Dennis Rodman involved in this one.
We might have to. Well, you know, this follows the same blueprint as with Kim Jong-un,
right,
where
exactly.
He antagonized him on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the to President Rouhani, what he wrote, and we talked about this last week in all caps, never, ever threaten the United States again or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. LOL.
Yeah, no, and now 2 weeks later, ready to meet with him.
So it's like, oh, he's going to do this to everybody.
Yeah, he's going to do it to everybody. It basically goes with his whole MO, which is, let me throw up some chaos in there, just like the tariffs and everything else, and then all of a sudden he can act like he solved it all because, you know, he'll make some kind of bad deal with tariffs and he'll then give $12 billion to farmers. And same thing with Kim. It's like he'll say that there's going to be hell and fury and all this fire and fury, and then, you know, 2 weeks later he's like, let's set up a meeting and talk. And same thing with Iran. It goes with his thing of throwing up chaos and then trying to fix it and act like
creating a solution.
Yes, and that he did this amazing thing when he was the one that created the chaos to begin with. So he's fixing his own chaos, but it seems to be his thing, and some of his base just lap it up and think it's incredible. You know, it's like, but if somebody else did that, if Hillary Clinton did that, talk about impeachment. There'd be impeachment hearings the next day. So, it is kind of ironic that they'll let him get away with that and continue to add to the chaos and then try to fix it.
You know, it's funny. Something you said as an aside just made me think. If Hillary Clinton had become president, the makeup of the House and Senate would have been the same. Mm-hmm. And she would have been, you know, president for about a year and a half now. She'd probably be impeached by now. I'm not even saying because she did anything, you know, I'm not making those allegations.
Well, no, because that's the whole
very
point.
Well could have just done
well,
it
no,
by
because,
now.
Well, no, because, again, you don't have to have done a crime to impeach a president.
Right.
So really, it's up to Congress to be like, well, we can impeach the president for almost anything. So, yes, they could have at least be going through the trials and be, you know, rehashing Benghazi or emails or something.
I was going to say, all they would say is, but her emails, and that's all it would have been. So Yeah, I don't know, just things to think about that, you know, it's obviously very difficult to impeach President Trump, but President Hillary Clinton easily could have been impeached by now.
Mm-hmm.
Were you going to say something, Tamara?
I think the media, I think we all need to just start ignoring the tweets, no matter what it is. Just ignore it. Do not add fuel to his baby fire. Just ignore the tweets. I myself am not going to make jokes about his tweets anymore. Just, you know, fanning the flames of this attention that he needs over this sort of sensationalism. So I wish that the media would, somebody would start some agreement amongst journalists to no longer just report on any tweets whatsoever. Just ignore it. Just focus on immediate policy and exactly what's happening.
Right.
From a comedy standpoint, fortunately, there are plenty of other things that you can focus on. So.
The thing is, in the climate, the way that it is now, comedy is no longer, it's all a matter of what information is being presented to the public. And unfortunately, whether it's coming from the mouth of a comedian or whether it's coming from, you know, a trusted, you know, who's the Walter Cronkite of our day? You know, it doesn't matter.
I don't think we have one, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah. It's being put out into the ether where people are absorbing it, and that's all that matters now. What about
Sarah Huckabee Sanders tweets or Mitch McConnell's? Or Kellyanne Conway's. There's so many good ones out there.
Mitch McConnell
can't ignore them all.
Scott, you wouldn't be able to stop yourself.
I can't stop.
Yeah, that's all right.
He's so ridiculous.
We can still report on because
they're so ridiculous.
Yeah, but they're not as reaction. They're not as
There seems to be
not
a stronger
rodeo clowns.
There's like a stronger tether to the real world when you read Mitch McConnell. You're like, oh, I don't like you.
I don't like you. I don't like what you're saying. But yeah.
I wonder if you scroll through all of Mitch McConnell's tweets, which that could be fun for you, Scott.
Yes, exactly.
Has he ever done one all caps?
Yeah, that's true. He hasn't.
It's probably like TGIF. Am I right or am I right? You know, one of those. But speaking of Mitch McConnell, he has said that there will be no government shutdown. But President Trump has said that, you know, the way that the headline gets written is that he's willing to shut the government down over the border wall, which is not inaccurate, but what he's saying is that more funding for the border.
Well,
so it's not just that in particular.
Well, it's inaccurate because he can't shut the government down. It's up to Congress to be able to do that.
But he's saying he has no problem with it. And then Mitch McConnell's like, it's not going to happen. No. It doesn't go well when the government is shut down.
Mm-mm.
It's also not the catastrophic thing that we're always told it's going to be, because it never lasts that long whenever we've had it.
Right. So. But it would be, it's not good for the government workforce that depends on their pay and everything while these politicians are still getting paid during the shutdown. So it never looks good. And as the Republicans learned back in 2013 when they shut down, of course, it was a year before the 2014 midterms. But when they shut down in 2013, they got the majority of the blame. And they know that going into a very contentious, potentially close election where they're going to be losing seats, to have them shut down the government, they know that they're going to be blamed for that because they're the ones that are
They're the ones who get to do it.
Or two branches of government there. So it would not look good for them. And Mitch McConnell knows well enough that it would not reflect nicely on them. So they know better than to go that route. And of course, Trump doesn't care because he's not the one up for re-election this year. So
no, he's got plenty of time.
When
we were talking about Mueller before, I forgot about this story that I wanted to get to, which is Trump lashed out at Mueller for saying that there was a conflict of interest because they had bad business dealings. Tamara, who have we heard from that had good business dealings with Donald Trump?
Good question.
Because in my heart of hearts, I feel like it's Putin, but we've not actually heard that.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Who has had KFC?
Well, see, but that's sort
Diet
of
Coke?
That's a
yeah.
more incremental
Diet Coke,
kind of
yeah.
like a transaction. That's not like a big business deal. Although you never know, maybe he prepaid in bulk. He just like he gave like $2 million to KFC.
Melania's clothing line, or
I was
not
say Melania herself.
I meant Ivanka. Ivanka's clothing.
Well,
line.
Her clothing line's not doing well at all.
Look, President Trump mixes up the two of them all the time, so it's fine.
God.
Yeah. So,
that's
idea
a
that
trick
you go
question
into business,
I don't know.
You get into business with him, and it's like, well, it didn't go well. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, of course not.
That's why, like, every time anybody, any Republicans, like, he's a brilliant businessman. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are still saying that, and it's like, do you pay attention to anything?
I mean, he's a businessman. He has a record as a businessman.
I mean, I have an Etsy store. Am I a businessman? You know?
No, you're like, a business person.
You're a business woman.
You know, like, I don't have an Etsy
good
store.
Good one at that.
But it's like...
I was excited for your
I was
Etsy
too.
Store
I was really thought you had one. I was like, hey.
I don't have an Etsy store.
Maybe that's what you
need. No. You don't have an Etsy store.
I don't have an...
yeah. So... checking out the chat. Thanks to everybody that's in there. We appreciate that as always.
Speaking of Mitch McConnell, can I make one little side note real quick?
Please, yes.
So I heard this news. This is newsworthy about Los Angeles and the Olympics coming. You know, we're trying to expand the Purple Line, which is for anybody outside mm-hmm. of Los Angeles. That's part of the LA metro system. Which has been successfully expanding, and we want to expand the Purple Line. The Purple Line expansion, we were granted, before Trump took office, we were granted a federal budget to fund that through the Department of Transportation, and that was granted. And now there's this issue with the Department of Transportation where they are not giving the funds to cities that have already been approved for these projects. And the Secretary of Transportation is Eileen Cho, Mitch McConnell's wife.
Yep.
Also an alum of the Heritage Foundation, which is probably the reason that these contracts are being held up in limbo. And it's not just a matter, it's not just an issue of California's a liberal state. It's not blue versus red. It's because there are red cities that this is happening to also. But it's just something interesting that I saw popped up, and Mitch McConnell reminded me of that.
Yeah, and it is true. And then they made it seem like they were going to approve them, but they were looking into them again. And then, of course, nothing has happened over the past year. Plus,
one of the things that I really want to wait until Chelsea's here to talk about, but we'll touch on briefly, is they crunched the numbers on the fact that Chelsea's friend Bernie Sanders has called for Medicare for all, and that would cost a paltry $32.6 trillion. And even if you raised some tax brackets on, you know, Warren Buffett's secretary or whatever all those plans are, that's still an insane amount of money that, you know, it's like, sure, you can spend it. Where does that money come from? And I think that, well, see, here's the thing. I mean, who knows when Bernie's going to run for anything again, if ever. I mean, at some point, you know, you got to figure he's just like, yeah, how many good summers do I have left?
You know? I mean, Christian wants everybody dead.
In Vermont, the summer's
it's
like...
It's a grim reaper over here. Vermont, just counting everybody's... Like,
summer's like two weeks
months,
in Vermont.
Yeah, I was going to say two months. I was giving them 2 months.
Credit. So, you know, and when you get to those numbers, though, then it sounds so imaginary that probably most people are just like, okay, whatever.
Well, of course. I mean, they are. But also... We have to, and I know Chelsea, if she was here, I'd have to say in her defense, it would be who's paid for the study? What is the study breaking it down?
Mm-hmm.
Who's crunching the numbers? Where are they getting those numbers from? Again, this is over a 10-year period. It would be that much. So how's it break down yearly? And
George Mason University in Virginia.
Yeah. So. All right. You gotta
so it's not the Heritage Foundation,
right? But you school in Virginia.
You gotta look at all those things and say that it's one study. Not to say it's not going to be expensive, but the issue with that is saying, oh, it's too expensive, we're not going to try. There are a lot of things that we could do, and it's also saying, what is the Medicare for All covering? You know, like we talked about, other countries have it, but there's still the basis of private insurance. Others have a base level of like, this is what you get for the money, which could be substantially lower, saying you get basic care, you get, you know, one doctor per visit a year for a physical. It could be, you know, X, Y, and Z where the cost would go down. So again, it's like, what do they factor in with that study for that cost? How much are the states putting into that? I mean, there's just a lot of things there that aren't really put up there, so it just seems like look at this number, and it's so crazy, and see, this is why we can't do it. And when you throw out a $32 trillion number, of course it sounds fantasy and crazy, and then right away you're getting people to shut it down without really investigating further of what goes into how they got those numbers and what it's covering and all that kind of stuff too. So I would be very quick, carefully looking at that before I start judging exactly where it came from, because I think there is definitely a place for it. It just depends where we're going to draw that line of what we're covering.
Well, you heard it here first, everyone. Scott's going to pay for Medicare for all.
I'm going to write that check right now for $32.6 trillion, and you can just take it to the bank right away and cash it, and it's all good.
Sweet.
I've got $33 trillion.
I'll pretend I know how many zeros that is, but it's a lot.
I've got another $1 trillion left over after that, so I can afford $32 trillion.
So,
no big deal.
We should really have been basically putting a little list of like topics we're saving to talk about with Chelsea. Yeah. But Tamara, we keep running out of time for something that we'll just spend a few minutes on, because I know you want to talk more about it when Chelsea's here. But talk about a conversation that you and Chelsea had on this show led to you doing some homework.
Ooh. Well, it's two separate things, because there was one show a while ago when we were in the midst of when they first started separating children at the border and the zero tolerance policy back in June. So I brought up the point. I said, so because then we were, you know, you kept hearing conservatives were saying, you know, this was Obama's policy. Trump is just continuing it. And I think on the panel, I said one day, like, well, what was Obama's policy? What was Bush's policy?
Mm-hmm,
and then we said, like, well, why don't we do some homework and figure out what the immigration policies of previous administrations were and how it compares to now. So there was that assignment. And then somehow intertangled in that, if it was the same show or a different show, when, you know, Chelsea first brought up that the reason that Central America there's so many immigrants from Central America is because of the devastation that the United States has caused in that area. And, you know, obviously I agree with her, but I wasn't very informed on that. And at the same time, all summer long, I've been engaging in social media discussions, arguments with Republicans so that I can have a productive conversation. Not that I'm thinking that I'm actually going to change somebody's mind on social media, but that I need to learn how to inform myself so that when they say they throw something at me, I can, you know, have a rebuttal. So I asked Chelsea outside of the studio, you know, more information on Central America. And so she has been sending me, you know, resources on the various things that the United States has done to bring Central America to the state that needed to the crisis that it's in now. So we can wait for Chelsea to kind of talk more about Central America, but talking about the immigration portion of it, I'd be happy to do now. But the immigration policy is, you know, I think we all on this panel know that Obama deported more immigrants than any administration.
Right.
And when Republicans say that Trump is just continuing Obama's policies, what's incorrect about that is that Obama did not separate children, did not actively. People who worked for Homeland Security during his administration say we can't say that it never happened, but we were not actively separating families. It was only in rare instances of, you know, we can't prove that this parent is with this child. This man has drugs on him. We have to take him into custody for other reasons. So there were circumstances like that, as opposed to the Trump administration that is actively or was actively separating over 2,000 children from their parents who still are not. There's still like less than 500 that are still haven't been reunited.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say more so than that. The largest difference in this is, again, this is something we all know here on this panel, so this is nothing new to us, but the conversations that I've been getting in with Republicans are they seem to not see what is wrong with the way that Donald Trump speaks about immigrants crossing the southern border when he calls them gangsters and criminals and makes it sound like it's all gang members are and crimes are being committed left and right and that kind of thing. And that is the crux of the arguments I've been getting into where this is a racist issue. And people who actually believe this thing don't see it that way at all. And it's just such a such a standstill between my point of view and theirs when I'm saying, it's ridiculous to me, the person that's like, how dare you call me racist just because I believe all immigrants from Central America are rapists and murderers and gang members? Why does that make me racist?
Do you find that they feel that way about all of them? Like, is
well,
that,
they'll say, you know, and I'll point, because the conversation will always start with me saying, you know, he has this rhetoric where he is calling a group of people dangerous, criminals, gangsters. And then they'll say, well, he doesn't mean all of them. And it's like, that's not how generalizations
work. Right, that's
work.
What I say. It's, you know, a generalization. Like, and that's exactly what a generalization,
you know,
is.
If I say all Republican, or if I, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, if I say Republicans are racist, mm-hmm. then you have to agree that you're fine with that statement. Because obviously I don't mean all of them. But like you... That's what a generalization is. You say a group of people is XYZ, and you're putting it out there that this is what these people are. It doesn't matter the percentage that you're referring to. Like, I think that's such splitting hairs for somebody to say, well, clearly he doesn't mean all of them. No, it's not clear. He means all of them.
He means, well, and the only two quick things I'll add is one, like, we've always talked about the people that are hardworking and not have criminal backgrounds or anything, don't want to leave home unless they absolutely have to. You're leaving everything behind, knowing that you're going crossing legally or illegally, whatever the case is, and having to live with family members in a studio apartment with six people. And the thing that most people don't realize is, you know, everything that you do has to be paid with cash, so you don't have any credit, which is a U.S. thing. I even have a friend that's trying to come over legally and get a work visa. And the fact is, it's like she can't even rent an apartment because she has no American credit. She can't get a car, even though she has the money, because, she has no American credit. To be able to get jobs, people want to look at credit. There's a lot of things where just people think that that these immigrants roll in and then they're stealing all these jobs and they somehow are taking from the government and everything, where they're living pretty miserable lives compared to most Americans, because they're having to bunk up with six, seven other family members in a 500 square foot place, working two or three jobs just to make ends meet, leaving everything they know behind to seek out a better life for their kids and everything else. And that somehow gets lost, that somehow they're coming in and these are criminals that are coming in to wreak havoc on America. And it, like you said, it's just that generalization. And I see from people, especially here in Los Angeles, where you see a lot of immigrants come in, and that they're coming in to make a better life. They're coming in to start their own businesses, do really great things. And somehow it gets generalized as a negative. And like we all know, the whole country was made from immigrants. And if they're not from Europe, they're not fair skinned and white, you know, it's like it's considered not good. But if they're Norwegian, then that's great.
Well, that's what I was going to say to you, is like, well, yeah, Scott, but white immigrants. All right.
Right. So if they're Northern European,
you know, and the slaves too, I guess.
And they speak English.
Yeah. Or, you know, close enough.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, that's a whole other thing with.
If you want to blame Obama for something, if conservatives want to blame Obama for something regarding immigration, they can blame the fact that his administration, as we know, in 2014 had the most unaccompanied minors than we had seen before. Mm-hmm. And so what Obama's policy, because this was unprecedented, you know, there was no protocol at that point to handle this, because this was new. We didn't know how to handle this at this point. So what he did was they tended to be sent to a family member who was already in the country while they awaited their trial and prosecution and stuff like that to handle that. So what kind of happened was they sort of got a pass and in no uncertain terms, you know. So that sent the message that, well, if you bring kids with you, it's more likely you're going to get in. So, you know, if you're going to blame if you're going to point your finger at Obama, point your finger at that, but, you know, realize that this was an unprecedented thing that he had to tackle. But he still was really strict on immigration, which is possible for a president to do without using hateful, xenophobic speech where you're blaming people. Another person I got into an argument with was like all about how people compare Trump to Hitler. That's insane. That's ridiculous. And I'll say, all I'll say is that both people took a group of people and blamed that group of people for the country's problems. They're why you don't have, they're why it's hard to get work right now. They're why you lost your job. They're why you don't have much money right now. That's, you're blaming a group of people for the country's problems. That is definitely something we saw before.
Well, it's something that strong, you know, dictator type, fascist type governments do. Blame everyone else, blame the media, blame, you know, and then you consolidate power by saying everything else is not. Well, what it is because it's everyone else's fault.
I think the problem with the Hitler comparison is that it happens so often. And, you know, this is, these are not new people that are being compared to Hitler. And, you know, there's the lengths that make it a tough comparison to swallow.
Sure,
you know,
sure, sure. No,
you're sending people back and you're separating them, you know. But when you hear the things of like, oh, we're going to just take your kids to take a shower and then you don't get them back. It is unfortunately eerily remnant. Look, those kids are still alive, so it is definitely different. But I understand what you're saying. It is unfortunately has echoes of it. Well, it is not the same thing. It isn't the camps where you're, you know, systematically liquidating what is it,
right.
6 million
it's
people.
Offensive so, to what happened then to people.
It's,
but
you can still feel like it feels a little bit like it. You know, like this part of the narrative can feel like the beginning part of that narrative.
And let's not just compare him to Obama. Like Bush and Clinton and Reagan and any previous president did not refer to immigrants in those terms, except for dating back to when the Chinese Relocation Act was, you know, when we just had these blatant acts in 1882 that was just like, let's get rid of this. You know, was not mincing words about we are getting rid of Chinese people now with this act.
Who never did that, of course, was my favorite, James Polk. But anyway, we are indeed out of time here on the Polk Report. But I hope we're able to continue the conversation with Chelsea next week.
There's still a lot more to go.
If we don't continue the conversation next week, that means it's been a really crazy week and we just didn't have time for it.
Oh,
but
Lord.
We appreciate everybody who joined us. And Chelsea was really here in spirit because we talked a lot about her.
But
we will be back. Remember, we're on Mondays for the next few weeks until Labor Day. So you can find us Monday at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern right here on AfterBuzz. You can follow me at ChristianDMZ on Twitter and Instagram. Tamara, where do people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at HeyTamara_.
And you can find me on Twitter at SMan80.
All right. Thanks so much, everybody. We will see you next Monday.
Bye.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.